Hi, I'm Mirko Bortolotti, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Steven, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 390, November 12th, 2009. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by the Northern California Jim Russell Rotax Challenge and Marin Karting. Check them out, you know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. And of course, we adore the Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Challenge. And of course, they're having their end-of-the-year gala. I was the guest speaker last year. This year, their guest speaker will be Steve Cameron. And, of course, Steve has over 30 years of motorsports experience as a driver, team manager, and driver coach. Steve will talk about the transition from karting to race cars, working with race teams, engineers, and crew to optimize the driver's opportunity in professional motorsports. So there you have it, Steven. On today's program, will Braun GP be back? Jenson Button wants how much? Fernando visits Ferrari. And of course, Motorsports Mondial with Nasser Hamid and our special midweek interview is going to be with Mirko Bortolotti. And of course, he finished fourth in the Formula 2 Championship with one victory and five podium finishes. He also took part in the season finale of F3 Euro Series and scored a podium at Hockenheim Ring last month, where this interview took place, Stephen.
Really?
Yep. So there you have it. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you doing in this post Formula One season atmosphere?
Doing all right so far. The withdrawal hasn't started kicking yet. There's still, you know, trickles of news coming across the beltway, so keeping me from, you know, going into withdrawal.
Exactly, and of course, the good news was Nasser was wrong and I was right. Renault has not pulled out of Formula One, even though they made some statement about they're going to leave that decision until December for a big Christmas present for everyone. But they've already got their test drivers lined up. Everything is on par for the course. We are going into 2010.
Yeah, I like we said last week, I have a hard time seeing them pull out when they've already basically agreed to pay Robert Kubica, unless for some reason there's a codicil in his contract that says that if we pull out of Formula One, you don't get paid. You know, I find it hard to believe that they would pull out. I see it more likely as a really soul-searching situation when the current Concord agreement comes up and they really have an out. That it's a big question mark. One hopes the economy continues to turn and that maybe Bernie, you know, loosens his purse strings a little bit and gives more to the teams and a little less to his shareholders.
I agree, and I think the economy is going to show some improvement next year, not just for Formula One, but for everyone that's involved in this economic crisis. I think we're around the corner.
Yeah, we're already seeing improvement here in the States in many, many aspects. You know, the stock market's pretty solid. There have been, you know, housing growth, property values are starting to rise again. So
it's all good news, Steve, huh?
One hopes.
Yep. And, of course, lots of talk about Braun GP, whether they're going to sign Jensen Button. Of course, Jensen Button's a world champion, and himself and his management team is demanding world championship price. I mean, Fernando does, Kimi Raikkonen does. Unfortunately, Jensen Button waited a little too long to become world champion to ask for the big.
Well, he was he already made his world championship money when he went to BAR, didn't he? You know, it's kind of, dude, you've kind of already picked up that paycheck. Now you're going to have to maybe take a bite out of it. The other thing, too, is it's tough economic times. You know, we've seen it throughout sports that, you know, free agents aren't getting those monster contracts that they were getting, you know, just 2 or 3 years ago, because the money's not really there to be paying an individual. Braun could probably pony up all the money that Jensen wants, but he's going to be changing his own tires.
But, well, the biggest problem is it may not be Braun. According to Auto Motor und Sport, Mercedes will acquire 75% of Braun via its main shareholder, Abar, which is a big Arabian company. And they're in the closing stages, and we're talking towards the end of the negotiations with McLaren as to whether Mercedes is able to rebrand the team starting next year. They could be coming back as the Silver Arrows of the Mercedes past, being branded as a Mercedes team, unlike McLaren. And Mercedes wants more control, which they don't have at McLaren.
Yeah, definitely. It should be interesting to see whether or not that happens. You know, because what Braun was in the paper in the feeds today, basically going, no, we're not going to be a one-hit wonder. Well, you may be, because your team may be a different name next year.
That's possible, but still, yeah, it's not like we're...
It's going to be Braun's Mercedes Silver Arrows.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're certainly not giving any kudos or credit to Honda, who did really most of the aero work on the Braun car.
Yeah, well, basically, almost the entire foundation development of the car was paid for by Honda.
Exactly. And I didn't see any Honda banners waving last weekend.
No, you would think that, you know, Ross would have at least come out and said, you know, just give him a little bit of thanks for, you know, bankrolling him for the first 12 months of his team's existence.
Exactly. So we'll see how this works out. This could be a big change. I'm not sure how Ross Braun's going to feel about this, but I don't know. And I don't know how McLaren's going to feel about it.
Well, I know McLaren won't be happy if there's another Mercedes team, since they kind of see themselves as Mercedes' team. You know, they don't mind people with customer engines, but to become another Mercedes team, if Mercedes takes 70% of Braun...
You're pretty much a manufacturer.
That's pretty much makes them Mercedes manufacturer team, which is kind of interesting that Mercedes is kind of moving into the sport as a manufacturer, whereas all the other manufacturers are walking away.
Well, you know, if the price is right, this could be, a lot of people say when the economy is down.
It's a good time to buy.
Exactly. Yeah. So this could be a good deal for Mercedes. And the irony really is that Braun GP really got the Mercedes deal because McLaren approved the last-minute engine supply deal for Braun as part of the FODA, loving relationships everybody had. And McLaren wanted to see Braun succeed as they want to see Sauber succeed this year.
They didn't want to see that team fall off the grid.
Exactly.
And so they approved the motor deal. But, you know, Mercedes was already supplying another team in Force India at the time, so I don't think it made that much difference. But I don't think McLaren expected Braun to be nearly as strong as they came out of the gate with.
Exactly. But I think this deal could clinch whether they sign Nico Rosberg.
Well, it's going to make a difference because right now if they have to pay Jens to keep him, they're not going to have money to sign Nico. They're going to have to go basically probably take either, you know, find somebody who's going to work for peanuts.
Or hire the infidel? The evil one?
Maybe. Nah, I would seriously doubt that they do that. No, I would expect them to pick up one of the kids out of GP2. who's, you know, Hack for that matter, hey, you know, throw a bone to Kaomi, you know. The kid had a great end of season. He's going to come, you could probably get him pretty cheap. He obviously can race with his, a Japanese-made car. So,
and I heard his sushi is pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. And doesn't Jens really like the sushi?
I think so.
He could give tips to the caterer in the trailer.
Exactly. So there you have it. Sushi for everyone in the paddock at half price. The other good news, of course, Bruno Senna has been signed for the Compos team, which is great, 2-year contract. We have Senna back in Formula One. Of course, that's a lot of pressure for him, but I think Compos is hoping that the Senna name will bring the sponsorship dollar.
Exactly, bring him some sponsorship dollars. You know, I don't think the pressure is as much on Bruno Senna as it was on some other individual that shall not be named, because his uncle's not going to be standing there over his shoulder, you know, criticizing every move he makes. He's going to, you know, he can be more his own driver. I'm sure there'll be plenty of comparisons.
It's never going to end.
Yeah, but it's not, I would think it would be significantly simpler for him than it would be for, say, he who shall be not named, the son of Nelson Piquet.
The evil one. Yes. Very true, but I wish Bruno Senna the best. I hope he does well.
And, well, I was really surprised that he didn't get a seat this past year.
Well, he should have been in there where Rubinho was and didn't, but Rubinho turned out to be a pretty good teammate and a certainly a qualified number two.
Yeah, definitely a qualified number. He is the consummate number two.
Exactly. So, and now you'll have to be number two too.
But don't try to put up a website about him.
I heard about that. And you know what? I'm still confused on what that was all about.
Well, apparently a bunch of people had false profiles claiming they were Rubinho, and Rubinho asked them to pull them down, and so the website...
Google.
Yeah, well, was their...
Worker.
Well, their South American partner was taking their time getting them off, and so...
But there are fake websites about people all over the place. I mean, I was
reading the article that you get into the comments at the bottom of there. Well, what about the ones for Alonso and like three other drivers that are up there?
I mean, on Twitter and Facebook, you can't tell the real ones from the fake ones.
Yeah, exactly.
Except for the ones that are honest, you know, fake Rubinho, four-legged Rubinho. I mean, is Rubens Barrichello going to sue the horse? Is that next, Stephen?
You know... Maybe after next season when he's looking for a paycheck. Maybe he will.
Oh, my God. It is the end of the world. But we'll see what happens. I'm still rooting for the four-legged Rubinho. But we haven't heard much of him. I hope he hasn't gone to pasture.
Well, maybe he's gone out to stud.
That's more like it. Keep up the good work, Steve, for that open mind. A lot of drivers getting ready for testing the... So rare word now in Formula One, testing.
And there's actually people who aren't drivers that are going to be doing some of it.
Well, you've got to find. This is the only way you could get these young people in the car. And some of these are bonuses for having a good season in some of the other formulas.
Exactly.
So I think it's a good thing. Everybody's testing. Ferrari has allocated the days to the top three finishers in the Italian F3 Championship. Zampieri, Zappoli, and Mexican teenager Pablo Sanchez Lopez. He'll be testing. Red Bull will be testing Ricciardo. And, of course, Brandon Hartley's back in it for Toro Rosso, which is good for him.
Yeah, definitely.
He was their reserve driver off, on, back again. That was a little bizarre.
Got to wonder how much data you're going to get out of the car when you're running an F3 driver instead of a Formula One driver. It just seems odd.
Well, I think this is more searching. It's like, you know,
kind of
just like in American sports when you're out and you got your scouts looking for talent. Yeah.
They're tryouts, basically.
Yeah, they're basically tryouts. And these days with such limited testing, you see talent and you sign them up or, you go back to DTM or whatever you were doing.
Or back to GP2 or
whatever.
GP2 on to DTM.
Because exactly. Hopefully, if you have a budget. That's the other major problem. Even Gary Paffett, who I think should have been given a chance many moons ago. He's always shown talent. He's always been a reserve driver at McLaren, but he'll be testing. And, of course, Kamui Kobayashi was supposed to be testing, but he'll be at father's restaurant.
He'll be looking for. He'll be up knocking on doors looking for a job.
Yep. And, of course, my favorite, Bertrand Baguette.
Yeah, I mean, I was laughing.
That's a great name.
That is so French.
It's just too French.
It's over the
top. It's almost fake.
Exactly.
Bertrand Baguette. So, of course, he'll be testing, and Luca de Grassi will be testing as well. So, we'll see what happens. And Karun Chandhok, he'll be testing with Force India. They'd like to have an Indian in there, but Vijay Mallya adamant about just being... Yeah. He just wants fast cars going fast.
He wants guys who are quick and who can race. He doesn't want to necessarily put an Indian in there, which makes sense. You know, he's competitive. He wants to, you know, get points, win races if he can. And, you know, again, we're going to kind of come into another season where the door's going to be kind of wide open again, mm-hmm. because the cars are going to have to take such a radical change to be able to carry as much fuel as they're going to need to run, and it's basically going to have to be able to carry twice as much fuel.
Absolutely. Of course, let's move right along to Fernando Alonso visiting Maranello.
Getting fitted for his
civvies, of course.
Yes, and
he's still contracted to Renault.
Probably getting fitted for all of his gear. That
all
pick
that
up
gear.
On,
I mean, you get a lot of gear at Ferrari.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just everything. And we've talked about the gear before. And, of course, some drivers not changing the gear for certain races. But this is all going to be good.
Or certain promotional appearances.
So, no, I think Fernando's going to be good. He speaks Italian. He's Latino. You know, it's going to be machismo. Even though, let's hope that Ferrari will give him a car.
Do you think Renault will release him early?
They possibly could. Everybody's nice.
Yeah.
You know, I think Renault's had a great relationship with Ferrari. There's no problems there. And I think the biggest problem is, as in the past, the cars were really designed for Fernando. You know, his hard turn-ins,
yeah.
especially when they were running Michelin tires at Renault. There was a lot of testing. Now you don't have much testing. He's got to go there and verbally and do a lot of simulator work.
Yeah.
Everything is simulator now.
And that's good, but it's not great because, you know, Formula One drivers in particular probably more than any, drive by the seat of their pants. It's the way the car feels underneath them that they really can get to the edge with. And you can't get that in a simulator because, you know, the thing's not moving.
It's not moving, Steve. That's the problem with the simulator. But they're working on that.
I'm sure they are.
But I think this testing thing has got to change. I certainly hope that some of the teams address this with Jean Todt, the new FIA president, because I think it hurts driver development. It hurts safety when you have a younger driver that's 2 or 3 seconds behind. Not only that, but when a driver gets ill and another driver needs to take his place, he's not up to speed. I think that's a safety issue. And I think it's just not good for the sport.
No, ultimately, no. I kind of like Bernie's idea if maybe they can pull that off to go with the extra day at the track. So I think it would make more sense to do it on a Wednesday or Thursday than trying to hold everybody over on a Monday because, you know, everybody's coming in already, holding them another day to do testing.
And I'm with that. Yeah, and I think it should be part of the weekend show. Do it on a Thursday. Make it bigger for the same ticket price. Give more to the fans that ultimately run the whole shebang.
Yeah, that basically pay for it ultimately on whichever end it is.
Because when I go to a Formula One race, or when I used to, when I could afford it, I wanted
there was one in our hemisphere.
When I wanted the whole package. You know, we always went Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We wanted as much as we could. And if there were some Thursday's activities, we've tried to get there. Unfortunately, sometimes our plane wouldn't get there.
Exactly.
But, no, I mean, that's a good idea, Bernie. Keep up the good work. The great suggestion. Testing on Thursday, practice on Friday, qualifying on Saturday, race on Sunday. That seems like a good recipe for success.
It makes more sense to me than, you know, practice, quali, race, test.
That's
doing
bizarre.
It on a Monday is just, to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't think it's fair to the tracks because that means you're going to have to hold people over a day, whereas they probably already got people there on Thursday. you know, in doing prep. Maybe have to prep an extra day earlier, but it just makes more sense. You know, I know that most fans, I know that when we've gone to Indy, we've taken the week off.
Yeah, and we get there as early as possible. Yeah,
and we try to fly out Wednesday night to try to get there Thursday morning. And we did pretty good last time we went. The time before, we got hung up and we missed a connection because they were late.
Of course, and we, you know, you and I, when we travel, we have a lot of PR stuff to do, meet the fans, so we have to be there early.
Exactly.
But, no, that's a good idea. I like the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Whole weekend of activities, just like Ferrari World will be in Abu Dhabi.
That looked bizarre. That would be interesting thing. It's like huge.
Monstrous.
And so it should be interesting. Well, I guess they probably get, you know, another track inside there. So
I want to go there one day, absolutely. So we'll see if our budget will allow it soon. But I'd like to go to Abu Dhabi and see Ferrari World for myself.
Yep.
So
that would be fun.
So there you have it, Stephen. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with an outstanding motorsports mondial, which is the only kind we know.
Exactly. Do we have any other type?
Exactly. We're going to remind everybody about Christmas and what you need to buy on Christmas. And of course, we have a wonderful interview coming after the MM. So we'll be back in 60 seconds, Stephen.
Are you between the ages of 8 and 80 and want to experience the thrill of wheel-to-wheel racing for yourself? Do you want a hobby that you, your family, or group of friends can share? The Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series, sponsored in part by Marin Karting, is the fast-growing Northern California series of the Rotex Max Challenge USA and can lead to an FIA-approved world championship. Rotex answers your dream of racing. With a reliable engine that's sealed, keeps carts on the same level playing field, your operating costs low, your fun level high, and your skill determining your success. Be your own number one driver as part of the Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series. Race on to NorCalRotex.com to learn more. And see MarinKarting.com for Rotex engines, parts, and accessories.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the man himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and racing regards from California to Valencia, which is our first stop on this edition of Motorsports Mondial. And before we get into Mondial, everybody doing okay here, enjoying the
libations.
Pacifico Cerveza and beer.
That's coffee, Nasser. I don't know what you're talking
coffee
about.
Coffee in a beer bottle?
We only have coffee here in the studio. This is a professional organization, except you with your tea.
Yes, and delightfully served by Mr. Fab. And Mr. Fab, how are you today, sir?
I'm hunky-dory.
That's good. Okay, we shall start with MotoGP action. Hector Barbera of Spain delighted his home crowd at Valencia by winning the last ever 250cc race as Hiroshi Aoyama of Japan took the title. In the final race of the class before the new Moto2 series takes over next year, Marco Simoncelli threw away all chances to snatch the title from Aoyama when he crashed from the lead late in the race. Danny Pedrosa moving up to the GP category. Danny Pedrosa dominated the main MotoGP race. And this is, of course, the season finale for them also. As Casey Stoner, he pulled out what I would call a Roberto Guerrero. You know, once upon a time, Roberto Guerrero crashed on the formation lap at Indy from pole position. Mm-hmm. Same thing happened to Casey Stoner on the formation lap. And the Australian Ducati rider was going for 3 wins in a row to end his illness play season. But I'm very happy to see him back on track, back on in action, back on top. So it should be a great MotoGP season next year. Valentino Rossi held off a late challenge from teammate and local rider, whom he called Jorge, Jorge Lorenzo, to claim second. 3 Americans in the top 5, this was very good, led by Colin Edwards in 4th, Nicky Hayden 5th, and Ben Spies, making his MotoGP debut after winning the World Superbike Championship this year, was 7th. And I don't know if you watch any World Superbike action. I watched most of the races, 2 races per weekend. Ben Spies was on fire. That was very, very impressive performance, and I think he will do very well in MotoGP. It really, you know, it you know, they talk about Americans in Formula One. It really boils down to the talent of the individual. If you're good, you're going to get there and, you know, make it. And if you're so-so, then you'll be so-so.
Just to be racing superbikes.
Huh?
You'll still be racing superbikes.
Exactly. The 2009 MotoGP season is over. Valentino Rossi, just for the record, is world champion. Jorge Lorenzo second, and bailing out of MotoGP at the end of the season is Scott Racing Team. And Valentino, now I don't know how much he's saying, but he's now being quoted as saying that he must get number. He's getting on the program. I should be numero uno. Because, you know, Jorge Lorenzo is definitely star of the future. He could be the Rossi of the future. So he wants Yamaha to give him number one status, or he might go and race with Ducati. The guy is an incredible talent.
And Kawasaki also pulled out, right?
Officially, yeah.
Yeah.
So
I could see Rossi at Ducati, all-Italian team, Italian driver. That would be machismo.
Yeah, that's what Giancarlo Fisichella thought at Scuderia Ferrari.
A little bit different.
Yeah. Rossi is an incredible talent. I love watching him. It's great.
Yeah. Put Rossi in the Ferrari and throw him in a Formula One race.
No, then he'll have some
then
issue.
We have what? Giancarlo and Rossi at the back?
Yeah, somewhere between him and Luca Badoer. But I'll tell you something. Everybody was so low on Luca Badoer, and with Fisichella struggling, his talk has... It's gone up from a penny stock to a maybe $1.20.
Okay.
But still far away from the big board. Okay, Australian V8, the Island 300 at Phillip Island. Jamie Wincup was the winner in race one, ahead of Will Davison and Rick Kelly. Wincup also won the second race of the weekend in his Ford Falcon. Mr. Faub, I know you are a big fan of this series, as I am. Any news as to when this will air on one of the U.S. networks?
You know, I don't know. I know that they have a solid website. You can watch highlights. I haven't been following them very closely this season for whatever reason. But, you know, our domestic race channel would much rather show an episode of Wrecked or, you know, Living the Low Life than it would a race from Australia.
Say no more. Okay, Rick Kelly was second in the second race, which was again won by Wincup. Rick Kelly was second and Garth Tender third, both in Holden Commodore. Two rounds remain in the championship and Jamie Wincup leads over Will Davison. And now we come to the host's favorite racing series, which would be?
Menasca.
Exactly. All three races, this was very impressive performance by the Busch family. All three races at Texas Motor Speedway were won by Busch brothers. The Rowdy Busch, Kyle, won the truck and nationwide race in his Toyota. His brother and Penske driver, Kurt, got out of Texas with the victory in his Dodge.
And George Busch wasn't in it.
Who?
I don't know. You had so many Bushes in here. I thought the whole gang from Texas.
I think he's working on the next Axis of Evil. But anyway, Scott Speed was 18th and Monty was 37th. And there was something else. Yes, Kyle Busch was actually on his way to winning the third race of the weekend also in his Toyota, but he ran out of petrol.
Maybe that's when the gang at Toyota pushed a button to say we're out of F1, and they accidentally pushed the NASCAR button too.
Delete few. Okay, but more some interesting news. This is what I call the fusion of the new and old worlds. Jarno Trulli and Mika Salo will both go in circles on November 16th and 17th at the half-mile New Smyrna Speedway in Florida, thanks to Michael Waltrip Racing. Both will be driving Toyota Camry Cup cars and no doubt will be singing, "Oh, what a feeling," after the experience. Now, my question is, for a gentleman, Mika Salo has been racing in American Le Mans Series, Sebring, Road America, you know, Mossport, fast racing tracks. Jarno Trulli, Spa, and Suzuka was back, Silverstone, Sao Paulo, Interlagos. What are these people going to do on a half-mile oval? Half-mile. You know,
it just makes me laugh just thinking about it.
You know, a friend of mine, we were once in Phoenix, and we just drove up to the PIR, Phoenix International Raceway, on a weekday, and we looked at each other when we got the view of the track. 1 mile you know, the straight is not even half a mile. It cannot be.
It can't, you know? It can't even
and
be.
You know, and you're looking at a car with 800, 900 horsepower, Indy car. Everything is designed for speed. You know, and this that's a 1 mile over, and this is half a mile.
That's ridiculous. You can see the guys parked in front of you.
Yeah. Well, my favorite is watching those races, and the leaders already starting to lap guys at the end of the first lap because yeah. the field's so stretched out. Yeah.
Who came up with this concept?
I don't know.
When they had little cars?
Yeah, well, not only that, but half-mile oval is for go-karts.
And not only that, but it would be great, like, maybe for a Citroën du Chauveau race or something.
Smart car race.
Yeah.
There you go, smart. Yeah.
That's what they should do.
Yeah. Well, you know, talking of smart, there is a program on Speed TV now called NASCAR Smarts. You should be on that.
I should?
Yeah, as the host. As the host from the West Coast. Okay, this was very sad news. You know, Ronnie Peterson Museum.
Sad.
This was very sad. Ronnie Peterson Museum has closed down in his hometown of Örebro. The Swedish driver, he was my first favorite driver when I started following motor racing in 1973. He was with Lotus. He was one of the best of the 70s and scored his first Formula One win at Paul Ricard in the 1973 French Grand Prix. Following year, he scored the first ever F1 race at our favorite place, which would be, sir?
Dijon-Prenois.
Exactly. In the beautiful black and gold JPS Lotus. Last Grand Prix win was 1978 in Austria. He was Mario's teammate in 1978 and lost his life after the opening lap fiery accident at Monza. And, you know, he also won the 1973 U.S. Grand Prix, and as I put on the forum, his wife, Barbara, after his death was involved with John Watson. And I was reading some years ago an interview with John Watson, and he said, you know, she really never got over his death. And later committed suicide by sleeping pills overdose. So pretty sad, and this is very bad that this thing
now,
has been.
Is this a financial situation? Is any
most,
way we can help
yeah.
this museum? I mean, this is.
No, I don't think the King of Sweden would allow zero checks there, but this is really sad, you know. They could have found some sort of a solution, house it in some place where it's open for a few days.
Exactly.
Because I was reading on one of the websites about this press release that they had visitors from the United States, Japan, all over the world. A lot of people, and they've put quite a bit of money into the local community because, you know, there's an entrance fee and blah, blah, blah. People come and spend on a hotel and this and that. Well, this was very bad. I hope they can take his selection, you know, his artifacts and memorabilia.
And at least get them into other museums. So
yeah, exactly.
Museum. Yeah, because I was going to say that I'd like to stay on top of this story and see what happens with some of these, with the collection, whether it's auctioned off.
That would be very, very sad.
Exactly.
Yeah, pathetic. And, okay, now we come to a public service message. You know, F1 Weekly is by the fans, for the fans, of the fans, loved by the fans.
Non-profit organization for the people.
Yeah, pretty serious nonprofit. Yes. Hopefully the calendar can change that.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. Okay, public service message. A big thank you to HD Theater Network for showing WRC, World Rally Championship events. Let's hope they expand their programming with events like Macau Grand Prix, which is taking place this year.
Australian V8s would be a good pick up for them.
Actually, Macau races this month. And I certainly hope they don't get tickled pink with shows like aforementioned Living the Low Life and Jacked on Wrecked.
Well, the best thing to do is email the TV station or the broadcast network. Company, the network.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know anything about this network, where they are based out of or anything?
I believe they're owned by Discovery.
Yeah, it's a Discovery Network channel.
And they have not been invaded by Fox News?
By evil?
By Rupert Murdoch?
No, Discovery is one of the bigger cable networks. You know, the History Channel and Military Channel and...
Are they part of some other big corporation? And
no,
these days, everything
they're their own entity.
Discovery, interesting.
It's the Discovery Channel Network.
Yeah, I think then it has to be from back east.
It's probably probably a spinoff of Turner kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay, this is the most important late breaking news. And this is late breaking every week, basically. Now we come to our Red Shoe Diaries. What Denica will be doing in the year 2010, 2011, and in the year 2525.
In the year 2525.
If man is alive and woman can't survive, and she probably will. Okay, after being linked with USF1, Chip Ganassi's IndyCar team, sponsored by Tarjay, NASCAR team of Michael Waltrip. The latest hot news is Danica will do a partial season in NASCAR Nation with Dale E's team. And if somebody has the time, I did not have the time, but if somebody can please Google and let me know how many races these two people, Danica and Dale E, have won in the last 3 years, I sure would like to know.
Okay.
Last also, 3 years, this is like one, isn't it?
I would I would tell her to go talk to Dario Franchitti.
Okay. I think Ashley may have something to say about that. But let's take a little musical break now. And that wonderful music was from the orchestra of Mr. Fausto Papetti of Italy. And talking of Italy, we now come to our interview segment. And this interview is with Mirko Bortolotti. And this gentleman came to my attention last year when he was winning a lot of races in Italian F3. Mirko Bortolotti is a rising talent in the Italian motor racing scene. He is 19 years old and grew up in Austria, so he's fluent in German. This year he finished fourth in the Formula 2 championship with one victory and five podium finishes. He also took part in the season finale of F3 Euro Series and scored a podium at Hockenheim Ring last month, where this conversation took place. In 2008, he won the Italian F3 championship in dominating fashion. Listen to this, winning 9 of 16 races and was on podium in 15 of the events. Very, very impressive.
Dominating.
Yeah. He was also very quick in Ferrari's Formula One car, which he got as a prize for winning the
championship. Which was last year.
Exactly. And he is now part of the Red Bull Brigade and definitely a man on the move. He will also be test driving next month at Jerez for Toro Rosso. For more information on his career, please visit his website, which is www.mirkobortolotti.it. And this is spelled M-I-R-K-O. Bortolotti.it. And he's a big sports fan. He likes football. He likes MotoGP. So I really enjoyed talking to him. And I would like to thank him very much for his time. And hopefully we will see each other at the races. Grazie, signor.
Okay, folks. I'm at Hockenheim with the rising star of Italian motor racing, signor Mirko Bortolotti. Sir, how are you today?
Yeah, not too bad. Qualifying was not the best, but we are here for trying to work on the car, trying to improve everything. So first time for me in the Euro Series, first time with this car, with these tires and everything. So we will see tomorrow what happens in the race. But of course, I'm not happy with the result of qualifying because I want to be in the top positions and not in the back. But sometimes it happens in motor racing.
Yes. Okay, now you took part in Formula 2 this year, and last year you were in Italian F3. How does this car compare to those two cars?
Yeah, compared to Italian F3, it's quite similar because it's a Dallara chassis, and apart from the engine and the tires, I think that most parts of the car are quite the same. So compared to Formula 2, it's a completely different car because Formula 2 has more power. It's a bit bigger, and it's different to drive, and yeah. But Formula 3 is of course a nice car, and it helps a lot the driver to improve his driving style for his career.
Now in Formula 2 this year, how did the season go for you, and what were the highs and lows for you?
The season, if we look at all the things that happened, I have to say that the season was not bad because we had a lot of issues on the car, and it was my first year international racing, so I didn't know any circuit. Every circuit was new for me, so that was a really important year for me because I had a lot of had the chance to learn a lot, and Formula 2 helped me to do that. Of course. The Formula 2 Championship is organized in a different way than all the other European Formula classes because you work. You don't work in a team, but you work with your engineer, which changes at every racing weekend, and it's quite a different style of working. But it's a nice championship, and yeah, I had the chance to do some very good results in Formula 2, but I'm not where I wanted to be. Of course, the target is always to win, but you know, motor racing is built by so many factors, and if you want to have also success, every single factor is very important and has to be perfect.
Okay, you mentioned the car, which is built by Williams, had some issues. What were some of the main issues that came up?
Yeah, I don't wanna say main issues, because I mean, new car has always some troubles, because I can remember a GP2 times at the beginning they had some problems which were fixed, and also Formula Master or other championship, and I'm sure that Formula 2 will do everything and is already doing everything to try to improve the car, try to improve the reliability. And that's very important. But if you're racing for the first year in a new championship, you know that from the beginning that you have this kind of problems. And yeah, just looking forward to the last race, and then let's see what happens next year.
Now, you mentioned this was your first international racing outside Italy. How did you find the level of competition? Was it quite a surprise for you?
I have to say that the Italian Championship was a really, really good school for me, because we saw that when I went to Formula 2, it was, of course, it was difficult, but I felt a really good feeling, and it was not quite different way of racing, because Italian drivers are not bad. So I think that, yeah, of course, European Championship is always a bit harder than a national championship, and that was very important for me to do this step.
Okay, you're from Italy, but you grew up in Austria. How long were you there in karting?
Sorry?
How long were you in karting?
I started when I was in the age of four. I was
age of four? Yeah. What kind of karts were you racing?
It was 50, what do you say, 50cc. And it was really small car. But the first time on a kart track, I was 5 years old. And yeah, but the first races I was able to do it with 8 years when I got the license. And yeah, I started very, very young, and I did karting till the age of 15, and then I moved to Formula classes. So it was quite an important way to do the karting.
I noticed that you went to Formula Gloria first race, you were on the podium, and when you moved up to F3 Italia, you were on the podium first race. Is that all because of your experience in training in karting?
Can be, of course, because karting is, as I said before, is a very important school for a driver. And I had the chance to race in national championships and also in international, and that was important. But the problem that I was a bit too tall for karting was a bit of a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. But it was important to compete, to be in... what do you say? In competition with other drivers, with experienced drivers, with more experienced drivers than you. Yeah, of course, it was a good step to move to Italy for the Formula classes, because in Italy you are able to get the license for the car quite soon, and that was very important for me.
Now, you did 2 years of F3 Italia, and second year you were on fire, 9 victories, 7 in a row, as you mentioned to me earlier in the day. What was the main difference that you had such an awesome season in second year?
Yeah, the first year I was quite young. I was 16 in Formula 3 Italia. So, yeah, it was a good season anyway, because in the first season, after half championship, I was leading the championship. And then the last three races, I had a lot of unluck. Twice I crashed, and then I had an engine failure. Mm-hmm. So I lost a lot of points, and I finished fourth. But anyway, it was a really good season, even the first one. And then the second one, it was... the only option for me, because I didn't have the big budget to move into international racing, and I was very lucky to find a team like Lucidi Motors, mm-hmm. which helped me a lot with because they wanted me to race in their team, and it was a really big help for me. Otherwise, I think that could have been the last year in 2007. So you see how fast career can change. and that was very important that I found this team, which helped me a lot, and it was a really good team because they won the championship the year before, and they have a lot of experience in the Italian Formula 3 and in Formula 3 in general. So I had had a really good year last year because I have to say that we started very late. We didn't do any winter testing, and so it was quite difficult at the beginning. But we managed to score a lot of points, which then was very important because during the year we were able to do some tests and we improved the car and myself as well. And then I was able to win a lot of races in a row, and that was the key for the championship then.
Now you are a Red Bull driver, so the budget issue is resolved. The question I have is, have you sent senior Luca Montezemolo a case of Red Bull?
No. I don't know him, so...
Have you ever met him?
No, never.
Okay, now as part of winning the Italian Championship, you got to drive in a Ferrari Formula One car, and you were faster at Fiorano than Kimi Raikkonen. What was the secret? Did you take a lot of vodka before the drive?
No, not vodka, because vodka, I think that...
That's how he goes fast.
Yeah, but everybody has his own style.
Very true.
Yeah, no, that day was amazing. I mean, apart from the time, it's the dream of everybody to drive a Formula 1 car. And if you are Italian, it's the biggest dream to drive a Formula 1 car for Ferrari. So it was amazing. I mean, I did a lot of... I prepared the day very good, I have to say. I did one day on a simulator, Ferrari simulator, which helped me a lot because it's very realistic. And then the day was it was easier to start the day having done one day on a simulator than without. But it was a big jump from Formula 3 to Formula 1, of course, because from 220 horsepower to, I don't know, 800, yeah. It's a big jump. So, but I have to say that Ferrari engineer helped us a lot, because we were three guys, of course, helped us a lot to understand the car and how to drive the car, and that was very important for us.
Between a F3 car and an F1 car, what was the first thing that hit you when you drove it the first lap?
The first thing was the power. Yeah, the power was amazing. I mean, you cannot imagine how it's pushing you into the seat. Yeah. And the second thing, of course, was the brakes, because the carbon brakes with a lot of aerodynamical grip, which the Formula Car 1 has, it's amazing. You can brake very late and you arrive much faster than with a Formula 3 car, for example. And that is it's a completely different style of driving.
Okay. Will you please tell our listeners, and we have listeners all over the world, a little bit about Mirko Bortolotti, the man, not the driver. What kind of music you like? What kind of food you like? You know, what you like to do in your spare time?
Yeah, I have to say that I'm quite normal guy. I live in Vienna. My girlfriend lives there as well. And my family, my parents are working in Vienna since the 70s. Okay. So, it's a nice city. I like it. But I like Italy as well. And in Italy, I live near Lake Garda, which is a nice area. So I have to say that I have both, you know, the landscape in Italy and the city in Vienna. So it's perfect. I like to do physical training. Of course, I watch all the Formula One races, and I like MotoGP as well. I'm quite a fan of sports in general. Football, I like a lot. I'm an AC Milan fan. If I have time, I go to the stadium to watch the games, and then I spend my time having fun with my friends and just relaxing and try to prepare as good as possible the next race, which okay. is very important for me.
MotoGP, I love MotoGP too, and I have to ask you this question. What do you think of the last lap of the Catalunya Grand Prix between Jorge Lorenzo and your man Rossi?
That was amazing. I think that was one of the best races ever I've seen in my life. That move from Valentino in the last corner was just fantastic. And against his biggest rival, which was racing at home, that's the maximum, I think, for him. And that was... I jumped out and I was like screaming because it was amazing. It was an amazing move. He's a great driver.
Have you ever met the doctor?
No, never, unfortunately. But I think that spending a time with him would have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, especially if he gives you a ride on his Yamaha.
Yeah. That I don't know if I would do that because, but I think he's the best motorcycle driver in the world, and there is no doubt.
Absolutely. Grazie, señor. Danke schön.
Mirko, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. I hope you listeners enjoyed that wonderful conversation with up-and-coming new talent out of Italia. And now let's have a little moment in motorsports history.
Thank you, sir. Today we're going to look at a few dates way back in time. Interesting information. November 9th, 1969, final race of Can-Am Championship in College Station, Texas, won by Bruce McLaren in his own car, giving the team a clean sweep of 12 victories in a dozen races. Anytime you have a clean sweep, of course, it is very impressive.
Might be the reason why Can-Am went away.
Yeah. November 14, 1945, Tony George's lucky dog day, long before he was born. His grand papito, Anton, also known as Tony Hullman, buys the Indianapolis Motor Speedway from Eddie Rickenbacker. Rest is 500 miles of history. And talking of Indy 500, let me promote my own propaganda. Please watch the last six laps of the 1982 Indy 500. Gordon Johncock from Coldwater, Michigan, leading. Rick Mears from Bakersfield, California. He's on it. You will not be disappointed. I guarantee that. And this preceding message was brought to you in part by Men's Warehouse. Nice to know we have sponsors who also write zero checks. So we may get into green and profitability pretty soon.
Eventually.
Keep the faith, you know. Okay, finally, November 12, 1995, the final Australian Grand Prix in the streets of Adelaide is won by Damon Hill in his Williams Renault. A year earlier, in the same place, he ran into some cross-town traffic with tire marks all across the side part. You remember that?
I do remember that. And what's funny is... recently, I heard Schumacher regretting the 1997 Jerez incident with my friend, Monsieur Villeneuve.
Yeah, Jacques Villeneuve was once interviewed in Motorsport magazine, and they asked him about his association or relationship with Michael Schumacher. And he said, well, let's put it this way, we don't exchange Christmas cards.
It's pretty good stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there you have it. Nass, thank you for another outstanding interview, outstanding motorsports mile in the aisle, always on the top of everything.
And your check is outstanding also.
Exactly. Thank you. My checks are always good.
Thank you, sir.
At all your local banking facilities.
And may I take the time to thank all the listeners who have ordered the calendar, and we are shipping all of them within 24 business hours, whether they're from the U.S. or from overseas.
Absolutely. We've got a sweatshop staff in the back over here. I mean, they don't...
You're looking at him right now. Yeah. Thank you.
And these things ship as soon as you hit click and order it.
And yes, and my request, you know, if they have the time, if they could send us an email or the posted on the forum, I would like to know, when they opened it, what was the picture that really hit them? Because these are from different eras, 50s, 60s, 70s, or basically what is their favorite picture in the calendar? We'd like to know that, please.
Absolutely, and definitely show your friends your new calendar because they're going to want one, and you have power. Anyway, let's go right into the wrap-up, Stephen. You've got the forum updates.
I have forum updates. And this week's news from the F1 Weekly Forums. A big forum happy birthday to Starfleet 76 and to Auto Racer 5, who turned 21. And hopefully he didn't get too close to the alcohol poisoning. The forum is getting into off-season mode. Lots of talk about driver placings and if any of these new teams will actually make it to the grid next year. The Countryside and Pit Babe threads are coming alive again, and I can just hear those tins of beans being opened. I wanted to use this update to announce the results of the 2009 F1 Weekly form prediction competition. This major championship of the season has confirmed Lion Bray as the outright winner of the prediction competition, despite continuously placing Weber to win. He scored 582 points, fighting off stiff competition from Starfleet 76, who ended up on 578. Completing the podium in third place was Rue Boulanger on 575, closely followed by Sihisin, Yay, Lab Traffic, Koala, Apex Slide, Rutha, Miguel, Eternal Tafosi, Iceman, Tricky Dicky, Scuderia, Borica, Mallory, Forza Minority, and Cyan. Sorry, Steve. Had to shout them all out. Other miscellaneous awards go to Sihisin for the most race wins at 4, and Eternal Tafosi, who scored a record 55 points for the British GP. The wooden steering wheel goes to Lap Traffic for scoring just 7 points at the season opener. This was never lowered, despite half points being awarded in the next race. Thanks to you all for getting in your entries to me each week. It was a struggle sometimes, but we did it. Thanks to Jackson for making all the important announcements. That's all for now. Keep up the good posting, everyone.
Thank you, Stephen. And thanks for another outstanding forum updates. We love the forum. Keep posting, guys. And don't forget to click on the Yahoo ads. Okay, let's go right into it. Marin Karting is proud to organize and support the 2009 Jim Russell Northern California Series. And I'm going to announce the winners of each
class.
Rotax Micromax champion is Nikki Hayes, second place Michael Mishoff, and third place Sarah Setzer. The Rotax Minimax champion is Drew Setzer, second place J.R. Raxo, third place Harrison Mills. In the junior Rotax, our champion is Brody Zink. Senior Rotax champion is Jordan Jadala, second place Gregory Laifui, third place, Nikola Radoslavich. The Rotax Masters, our champion is Donald Durbin. Second place, Jack R. Luck. Third place, David Harwin. In the Rotax Masters Light, our champion is Andrea Delfanti. Second place, Mary Beth Wilson. Third place, Steve Weiss. And last but not least, in the Rotax Double D2 is champion Troy Castaneda. Second place, Kyle Gimble. And, of course, third place, David Arnstein. There you go. Another outstanding 2009 season. And these guys have done a great job. If you're into karting, if you like karting, call Marin Karting at 415-898-0999 or go to their website, marincarding.com, and get all the info. I'd like to mention our MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter sites. Steve, I know you tweet a lot, being the tweet that you are.
Ooh.
Well, an open mind, I figure, goes hand in hand with tweets.
Aren't you just trying to say I'm a twit?
I did not say that, Stephen, and that would be wrong. I'm the host and you're the co-host. It's as simple as that. But check us out. Those are wonderful social networking sites, if you like your F1 Weekly early in the morning. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@f1weekly.com. We always have great deals for monthly advertising packages. I want to thank all the listeners that have supported us this season. It's been wonderful. I want to thank everybody who's ordered a calendar. And I really want to thank the people that have ordered 2 calendars.
And we really want to thank those of you that are placing your orders as you hear this podcast.
Exactly. It's a beautiful calendar. Get those Christmas presents in. You'll feel so much better because then you could just relax, knowing that you have the coup de grace in the best Christmas present in the world.
That is the perfect, politically correct cubicle calendar.
It is. I mean, any cubicle without that calendar is really no cubicle at all. Good night, everyone.
Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts
all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.